Introduce yourself, please.
I am Nancy Lusk, and I represent the 22nd Kansas House District.
Welcome. Here's the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. And joining Nancy and me in the KCUR production studio today is Dave Dravetta from Gardner, Kansas, and my colleague Andy Marso, who covers health issues at KHI News Service in Topeka, also cover the State House for the Topeka Capital Journal. We're going to get around the table here in just a second. Lots of stuff to get to, but we start with how you got into politics. And if I remember right, politics is kind of the family business, is it not?
Well,
and we hear that a lot on this show, and I'm intrigued by it.
Well, you've done your homework. My grandfather was in the Kansas House. He served a term in the late 20s. My father served for a total of 20 years, yeah. Both Democrats, which is kind of unusual. And my dad was kind of special. There are people today who still remember him. He was known for his Will Rogers style of humor. When things got tense in the House, sometimes the Speaker would call on him to come down to the well and, I don't know, lighten things up or something. But he was also smart. I mean, he was on the Ways and Means Committee. And I can remember thinking as a kid, I do not want to do that when I grow up. I kind of ended up backing into it. But it just seemed like a very extroverted thing to do, and I was introvert.
And now you're in the Kansas. Legislature, and I think, and let me ask you this. Do you think any of your kids are going to want to get into politics, continue the political legacy?
I should tell you a little bit about my husband. We have a mixed marriage. I married a Republican. Through the years, we've...
But a Johnson County Republican?
Just when we were engaged, he first introduced me to Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead author, Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
But... it's really worked out well over the years because we like to talk policy and debate it. And if you're not so much interested in party labels but more interested in policy, that's how you really vet an issue, is to have both sides. So our kids grew up in that environment. You ask about the kids. And I'm proud that in some families, if people start arguing politics, it might tend to make... to want the kids just to shut down the subject and not even go there. But in our family, they liked it so well that, yes, I think they might. However, our son Nathan might, maybe Thomas. Thomas is actually maybe the one who's most interested, but now he's an architect. So I've told him, just go and do that, make some real money. A legislator gets paid $11 an hour, and I think it's about the same on the Senate side. Mm-hmm. But we shall see. If they do, I hope it's not for a long time.
Well, I'm looking forward to having another Lusk on the podcast. All right, enough of this.
Okay.
Let's go around the table. Dave, I believe you are our first South Johnson County guest on the podcast.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. So let's start with you. What's on your mind for Nancy?
My first concern, really, for the state of Kansas is the direction we're heading with education funding. So I really would like Nancy's thoughts about the block grant funding, particularly the assertion that it's creating a greater divide between the rural and the urban districts and the rich and the poor districts.
Well, that's true, and you know, there are lots of problems. It was rushed through. And it came to the House. The first question that we asked of the carrier of the bill was, is this an appropriations bill or is this a policy bill? Because really they're not supposed to be mixed. The carrier couldn't answer it, so she asked the chairman of the Appropriations Committee to get up and answer the question. And he said to the questioner, well, what would you like it to be? Because you know, he kind of knew he would have been caught there. Well, my personal advocacy has been in education. I mean, for 12 years, that's all I did. It was like a hobby, a passion to get more funding for education. And so that's what I come from, but this budget crisis is so overwhelming that at this point, we've got to solve that first before we can even, you know, really consider a new formula.
But to Dave's question, I mean, does it, and we hear, you know, we hear various things. I just did a story last week on 26 districts across Kansas have had to make adjustments, budget cuts, lay people off, perhaps close early. So are we creating a divide, a bigger divide between wealthy districts, think Blue Valley, Olathe, Shawnee Mission, and the rest of Kansas?
Sometimes it's characterized as Johnson County versus Western Kansas, but it's really more of a poverty versus relative wealth issue. And in 1992, they revised the school finance formula. It took a great infusion of cash so that there wouldn't be a real divide between the winners and losers in order to placate enough people so they could get it passed. And that was also true the time before that. We are not going to have a great infusion of cash this time out. It's, you know, we're just barely getting by. And we've only been able to get by with a lot of one-time fixes. I don't see the governor really stepping up with his own vision for a new formula. I get a little bit nervous. I mean, Johnson County, you know, we would like to see more local authority, but I worry that when we get a final result, that may not, we may see it be reduced. So we want to hang on to what we have with that. It's kind of a distraction from the bigger problem that we must solve. The budget crisis is so overwhelming.
Yeah, I want to come back to that, but I want to bring Andy in and see what's on his mind.
Okay. Well, I think I'd like to just pick up where Representative Lusk left off there with we must solve the budget crisis. And that's why this is a really exciting time, because there's going to be a tax plan put forth in the next 2 weeks to try and close that budget hole. And I don't think anybody in Topeka or outside Topeka really knows what that tax plan is going to look like yet. There's no sort of overarching, you know, idea that somebody in power is saying this is the plan and we're going to push this through. It's very much wide open right now. So this is perhaps the most important time since I've been following the legislature anyway for people to really start to pay attention and quickly contact their legislators and tell them what their preference is, and don't wait. Like, do it as soon as possible. If you don't know who your state legislator is, find out and then contact them, email them, because in the next 2 weeks, they're going to be trying to figure out which of these options for new tax revenue do my constituents hate the least, basically, because nobody wants a tax increase, but we need to increase taxes to balance the budget. That seems to be the consensus we've come to in Topeka right now, that there will be tax increases. And the question right now is what type of tax increases? And there's a whole lot of stuff on the table. And so now is a super important time, because it's going to touch every Kansan in the pocketbook one way or another. Every person who lives in Kansas has an interest in this. Now is the time to find out who your legislator is, contact him or her, and say, hey, I'm in your district and I vote, and here is the tax revenue I would like you to see. These are the sources I'd like to see you tap into.
Yeah, I want to come back and talk about that for a second, but I got a little clip of tape that I think illustrates exactly what Andy is talking about. I'm going to play that, and we're going to come back and talk about it.
Republican Kansas State Senator Les Donovan had reporters thinking he was giving them a hint on the plans. He says there's been too much focus on Kansas eliminating income taxes for many business owners. He says when the state cut personal income tax rates, that did more to cause the budget gap.
That is a lot more dollars than the business, but it's never, ever been reported that way.
So that prompted one of the reporters to ask, does that mean he'll propose tweaking the personal income tax rates?
No, not saying that. Not those rates.
Donovan clarified that he's not eliminating the option of changing personal income taxes. The tax committees will start debating proposals next week, and the final product could take bits from many different plans. I'm Stephen Caranda at the Kansas State House.
All right, Stephen Caranda from Kansas Public Radio. That was on Friday's morning edition on KCUR. So it sounds like that everybody knows there's a problem. It's a huge problem, at least a $400 million problem. Mm-hmm. And there is massive confusion. Your thought on that?
Well, we have made some progress. I mean, I have to agree with Andy that it's starting to be an exciting time in that different individuals in important positions are acknowledging that perhaps the income tax cuts were a problem.
Well, the most important of that is the Senate President, Susan Weigel, from a Republican, a very conservative Republican from Wichita.
And I'm also thinking of Senator Denny. He's the vice chair on the Senate
from Olathe.
Ways and Means. Yes. And they've even offered some possibilities. And that's progress. I personally think we should step back and look at how we got into this problem and what the governor's goal and the conservatives wanted to make Kansas a no-income tax state. And there are 9 no-income tax states in the union, but the ones that are successful with that policy are Texas, or ones that have a massive additional source of revenue to make up the lack of income tax. And with Texas and Alaska, for example, they have oil, and we don't have that. And personal income tax made up about 1/2 of the revenue we had in the state general fund, before we made this change. So we're replacing it basically with nothing, or the theory was it would just, the economy would just take off, and that hasn't happened. And in fact, we've been lagging behind the national average and the other states in the region in terms of many economic indicators. And my frustration with a lot of the legislators, I think they engaged in shallow thinking, and I think we kind of need to bring more deep thinking hats and think about, give consideration to maybe it isn't working and think it out a little bit better. Maybe that's an advantage I had with my husband, because I could never get by easily without being a deep thinker, because with him coming from the other point of view, you know, we could thoroughly vet things. And that's a problem when you have a legislature and a House where there are super majorities. If 2/3 is a super majority, more than 3/4 for one party is a super majority. And so we don't thoroughly vet these issues.
Yeah, I want to bring Dave back in, but I want to ask you specifically, and you're former mayor of Gardner. We've had a number of local officials sit in that seat, and I'm wondering, as you watch what the legislature is doing, what are your thoughts on some of the impositions that's coming out of Topeka for local governments?
That's very very interesting question. As mayors, supported local control and have supported local control for many, many years. And what I'm seeing, and I honestly believe that what the rest of the mayors, particularly in Johnson County, are seeing, is that local control means it's okay as long as our local control aligns with that particular ideology of a far right Republican base. For example, the concealed carry legislation, the open carry legislation that's come through, and now obviously we've lost any control over permitting concealed handguns. That should be a local control issue. The citizens of a community should be allowed to decide where guns may be carried in our communities, and that piece of local control was taken away by the legislation. Mm-hmm. But if when we go back to the school funding bill, the assertion is that that's local control. Well, essentially, what it is that the money that the local districts have been providing to the states no longer coming back to the district, but the district is allowed to raise taxes in that particular district to make up the gap. So the local control, in my view, is if it's politically expedient for the legislature to let the local governments make the decision in taxes, raising taxes, for example, that's when it happens. If it's in particular concerns, ideological concerns like Second Amendment rights, then that pulls back to the legislature.
I want to move on here, not too far from what we've been talking about, but Andy, I want to know, they're back in from their the legislature's back in for what was always called the veto session. Now, I think you've got to come up with another name, Nancy. When you go back, you got to figure out this isn't a veto session, so you got to come up with another name. So I'm wondering, from what you've been reporting, how long is this session going to go on?
That's very much up in the air. There's some
end
folks,
of May. Are we going to go into the summer?
I'll tell you, I have vacation plans starting May 16th, so I'm hoping
that may or may not happen.
Right, I'm hoping they actually get done within the 90-day limit. But there's certainly a possibility that won't happen because, like I said, nobody really knows what this tax plan to close the budget gap is going to look like, and you cannot adjourn the session until you've closed that budget gap and passed the budget. So, you know, if somebody can come up with the right tax package that suddenly, you know, can get 63 House votes and 21 Senate votes, then we could end tomorrow. But I don't know, like I said, I don't think anybody knows what that kind of tax package would look like at this point. The Republican supermajorities in both the House and the Senate are very fractured. You know, you had Stephanie Clayton on not too long ago, and she talked about how, you know, a lot of times in reporting shorthand, we refer to them as conservatives and moderates, but it's really a whole spectrum. I mean, it's very fractured. And so the idea that it's going to be easy to get 63 House votes and 21 Senate votes on any tax increase, I think, is naive. And so that leaves us at the point where, when do people get desperate enough, essentially, to get out of town that they will pass a tax increase, and who knows how long that will take.
Well, you know, it took them. It was not easy gathering up the 63 votes to pass the block grant school funding, which Dave was just talking about. And if that was so hard, Nancy, how hard is it going to be to get 63 votes in the House to pass a budget? And while you're answering that, I'm going to ask Dave to give me just a little bit more coffee. Anyway, so how hard is it going to be to get 63 votes?
Well, we've been asking our ranking Democrat in the House Appropriations Committee, Jerry Henry, and he's certain it'll take at least a couple of weeks, maybe just even for the get out of committee. Yeah. It's a hard road.
Are there actual plans floating around, or is this all, like a buffet? We're going to take some from here, some from there, or do you think we're going to get a comprehensive plan from somebody, and it's not going to be the governor, but from somebody that is at least a good starting point?
Well, they have used up all the reserve funds. We had $380 million left for this, and they've used it up to balance this current year. So that's gone. So they're looking at a lot of one-time fixes. And I am glad that finally leadership in that counts, like Senator Denning, are saying we've cut enough. A 10% cut isn't realistic. And so that's progress. But they're looking at one-time solutions still, and just kicking the can down the road. And
highway fund, for example.
Yes. Yeah. And the highway.
And that's going to run out pretty soon.
The designated funds for the highway, we have been using up over $1 million a day. That's how much we've been transferring out of it. And it's gotten so bad that the secretary, the Department of Transportation, this is the governor's cabinet member, and his department, and they're now saying that if we continue on the rate we are in terms of transferring the money out at over a million a day and continue with the projects that are going on, by the fiscal year of 2017, we will be down to only $7 million in the fund.
Right. And next thing you know, the roads are going to start looking like Missouri's.
So I would favor, we have ideas, we have suggestions. What people don't realize is the governor made the income tax cuts, it was a mix of the cuts and also some tax increases. And tax credits were reduced. Most of the 1 cent sales tax was made permanent. Those types of things. I mean, he's been increasing taxes already all along, and those were increases that hurt the middle class the most.
I think it is going to be kind of a buffet, like you said, Sam. I think, you know, the business tax cut exemption, that's on the table. There's certainly people who are talking about revising that to get more income. The tobacco and alcohol taxes that the governor proposed at the beginning, there's still a chance for them. Not in the current form, but Les Donovan, who runs the Senate Tax Committee, has already said, if we can't pass the governor's tobacco tax, I have amendments coming for smaller tobacco tax increases. So they're still looking at possibly getting some money from taxing tobacco. There's ideas out there for a general sales tax increase, another general sales tax increase. There's ideas out there to cut taxes in some ways. I've heard that the Michael O'Donnell and Olathe Fausa Gadot's idea to exempt groceries from the sales or not groceries, specifically fresh produce, fruits and vegetables from the sales tax is back in play. And so that could be part of a bigger tax package where you raise the general sales tax but then exempt fruits and vegetables to kind of throw a bone to the lower income folks.
Right. I mean, we need to wrap it up here pretty quick, but before we go around the horn one more time, I just want to follow up on that and ask Nancy and Andy as well. This is going to be some late night closed door deal. Now, not past midnight because, you know, that's too late for you guys now. But, I mean, isn't that how this is all going to, you know, it's all going to come down. And when they really want to go home, they're going to get themselves locked in a room, the leadership, and come up with some package, right?
Yes, I was elected to represent my district, to go and be a voice and present ideas and participate in the debate. And we've been marginalized in the House. The way it should have worked is for each chamber to pass their budget bill and then for it to go to conference committee. The Senate passed theirs. On the House side, it passed the committee and it bypassed the House chamber. So sometimes when folks ask, well, what are you going to do to solve it? Well, I guess, first of all, I'd like to participate in the debate, you know, and have a vote. And then when it comes back to us, we already know the taxation bill is going to be a gut and go where they stick it in a House bill that's already passed. Right. And the effect of that is we can't add amendments. We can't offer suggestions. And we know that's going to happen because Senator Donovan said he's already told us what the House bill number is of the bill they're going to gut and go with, you know, 2109. And so we're just, you know, frustrated. It's going to come down to actually four people on the conference committee really deciding it more than, the House and the Senate.
Right. I understand. All right. Once more around the table before we say goodbye, Dave. Your final thought or question for Representative Lusk?
Well, my final question would be a bit more than we have time for. I think my concern. Andy talked about contacting our representatives. My representative, Bill Sutton, during the break at an open house, said that we have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. And he said that there's no indication that the tax cuts have impacted revenue, and I've already started receiving robocalls to call my representative and urge them to not repeal the plan to eliminate income tax on small businesses. So, my concern, Nancy, is that you do have the voice, and that other moderates within the Republican Party have a voice as well.
Well, if they really dig into their heels to that extent, it may take the next election to resolve it. Democrats got in trouble, and some moderates, for speaking the truth. We were punished for speaking the truth in the last election, and people hadn't felt the effects of the tax policy yet, but now we've run out of the reserve funds. We're going to run out of KDOT, the bank of KDOT. So it's all hitting, and the moment of truth is here. It's, you know, I think reality is catching up with us. It is not a spending problem. I mean, when you have even Republican leadership acknowledging we've cut about all we can cut, when you have the governor saying we've cut schools enough. But just to humanize it, to show we are being responsible with the funds we have. The average state employee has not had a raise in 7 years. Kansas teacher salaries rank 42nd in the nation. The salaries of our judges rank 48th in the nation. 30% of our roads are in poor condition. I mean, we have needs, we have concerns that need to be funded. For us, the state's main responsibility is to provide the things that contribute to quality of life. And of course, that's public education, because with that, that is what fuels a good economy. And that is what helps us to have a strong democracy. And I will hope that whatever the solution is, it will be fair, and that we will fund our schools appropriately.
All right. You know what? I was going to leave it there, but I saw Dave writing furiously in his notebook, and I demand to know what you're writing.
Well, I've got notes about Medicaid expansion. I've got notes about.
Oh, yes.
I've got notes about curtailment and aid to families. But, you know, Andy started me thinking about grassroots because that's really what has caused the surge in the right. Mm-hmm. Is a return to grassroots organization and grassroots mobilization of like ideologies. And that's really what needs to happen on the moderate side. I think that we as Republicans and Democrats need to understand that it's not that party affiliation, that it really is our belief system and our support for fairness and for Kansas to be a state of choice that really should drive that grassroots effort. And that was kind of my thoughts as how I might get folks
Nancy,
together.
Good, and I want to hear your thoughts on this. You're a good Democrat, and those Democratic roots go deep in Kansas, is Dave
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes. I think the grassroots is mobilizing. I was surprised after the election how many people were still energized and wanting to continue the fight. I see parallels between the 2014 election in Kansas with the 2004 national election, in that people thought John Kerry had a good shot at winning, just like people thought, well, perhaps Paul Davis does, and then George Bush really poured on the effort on his part, and he won, as did the governor. Well, think back. You know, how did that turn out? The policies that were enacted had timed. There was time for people to feel their effects, and the tide turned. And I think we're at that stage here in Kansas. The tide will turn. Well, Medicaid. Medicaid is something that I hope is included in the tax plan to expand Medicaid, because it will mean more jobs. 180,000 more people will receive insurance. Kansas was the only state where the number of uninsured went down. But the main reason now is an economic one for the state budget, because it will help us, I think. States where expanded it, they are seeing it be beneficial to their budgets. Arkansas and Kentucky are going to have $100 million plus to their budgets by the end of this fiscal year because they expanded Medicaid. That would help. And just kind of wanted to answer that because I thought it was relevant.
We're going to come back to that real quick, okay. But I want to bring Andy in. There's no organization covering health and Medicaid, possible Medicaid expansion better than KHI. So is Nancy right with her assertions about what it would do for the economy? And is there really a chance that it's going to come out of this session?
There's some early data, yeah, that suggests that the states that expand Medicaid saved money from their own budgets because more people were covered, and so that took some pressure off things like state mental hospitals and things like that. And because the Medicaid expansion is so heavily weighted with federal dollars right now, essentially what the states were doing is they were subsidizing care that used to be provided through state dollars with federal dollars. And so that's how some of those states were able to save money off the expansion. Now, that federal money gets stepped down starting next year, and so it's maybe less of a good deal for states. They got to put more, quote-unquote,
but it never goes below 90%, correct?
Right. It never goes below
90%. That's still a lot of money.
Yeah, I would say the early data right now suggests that states that expanded have seen some, you know, some of the states anyway, because not all of the states have been studied. But where it's been studied, some of the states have seen budget savings from expanding Medicaid, but it's still very, very early in the expansion. And what the folks who are against expanding Medicaid would say is that it's about to get more expensive for states. And, you know, it's kind of mixed.
It is over two-thirds of Kansans support it, and it's even higher in the Johnson County area than statewide.
All right. Andy Marso, KHI News Service, thank you for coming in. Dave Dravetta from Gardner, Kansas, appreciate you coming in. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. By the way, there's lots of ways to find us. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, find us over there on kcur.org, and our buddies over on UpToDate clear out a little room for us Tuesdays at 11 o'clock. Are you a fan of the Twitter? I'll bet you are. And you can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. And would you like to be in Dave's seat for a future State House Blend? You can either message me on Twitter or email me at sam@kcur.org. Nancy Lust, to get to know you just a little bit better, We end the program with your favorite song.
Okay.
What is it?
Well, I'm really an idealist and kind of corny. I like the civil rights anthems, you know. So I would choose We Shall Overcome.
Outstanding choice. In fact, this may be my favorite favorite song since we started doing the podcast. Nancy Lusk, thank you very much. I'm Sam Zeff. See you next time on Statehouse Podcast.